Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Wednesday, January 11th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters.
Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a very, educational show for you today. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, we're going to welcome education specialist Jen Schneider. She has her specialist degree, master's degree, bachelor's degree, all of that in early childhood education. She is going to be teaching us how to implement the homestead as a classroom and how to teach math, science, reading, and social studies right there on your homestead for all you homeschoolers and anybody else that, you know, want to, after school, when your kids come home and they're doing some chores out there, how you can implement even their chores on the homestead as an educational tool for the youngsters. So definitely looking forward to that. She joined just about a year ago and did something kind of like this then, and so we're going to do again that today. Let me see what the date is. Yeah, so tomorrow the 12th, it looks like we're going to have Richard Frudenberger joining us tomorrow. He's going to be talking all about cast iron, how to cook with cast iron, how to clean cast iron, where to buy cast iron, all the characteristics of cast iron. I am really looking forward to that show because we only cook on cast iron here at the homestead. So that, again, is the second Thursday of the month tomorrow. And we'll welcome Richard Frudenberger. So, and then of course this Friday, another awesome, fun Friday. How do you make your weeks go by faster? Tune in every day right here at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. We guarantee you to have you'll learn something and you'll have quite a few laughs along the way, which will make not only the day go faster, but it'll make the week go faster too, especially when we roll around to those fun Fridays. I want to send a shout out real quick to the folks that are starting to pile in the chat room. We've got Andreas. He's tuning in from Norway. Thanks for joining us after that long holiday break. Appreciate you remembering us and tuning back in all the way across the pond from Norway. Bard Rock, East Dallas Dave, many, many guests today. Thank you, guests, for tuning in. If you'll take a moment and register, I believe just below the chat room, there should be a little button that says how to register. So click on that, register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can participate in the chat room as well. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions or tips about today's topic, you can post those also in the chat room. Let's see. We've got Heather's in there. Welcome back, Heather. You've been working and staying busy as well. Good to see you back in the chat room. Kevin in Bakersfield. We got Poet's Wife and, of course, Super Grover. And Teacher Jen is joining us in the chat room as well. That'll be our special guest today. So we've got a great week, the rest of the week lined up for you. What's going on our homestead? Well, I had to run into town a little bit. It's about 10 miles to the town. Had to run in there and pick up a few things, get back here, run by the post office, and then, of course, back to work on the homestead by putting in our fence. We're putting in some fence. What kind are we putting in? Kind of a wood rail wood fence with wire. And so right now, Philip and I, we're out there, got the old tractor, got the old auger on the back of the tractor. We've got on one whole side, it's 170 feet on one side of this particular lot. We've got another back 40 that we're going to use different type of fencing for around the big garden and the whatnot. But just around this particular lot that the house sits on from 1900, one side is 170 feet. So we got all the holes put in, and we lack probably about 10 posts. I think we've got about maybe 10 posts in, and I think there's 20 or 22 going down that side of the property line. So after the radio show, I'll be out. We should anticipate. It rained all day yesterday. Couldn't do a dong thing outside. But we anticipate today a little breezy out there, kind of tough on the eyes and the skin. But the sun's shining, it's nice. We should be able to get all the posts in on that side, I think, except for maybe two by the end of this evening. So we're looking forward to that, and then we'll start on another side. We want to get all the posts in first, 4x4 wood posts. There, actually, each post is concreted into the ground with concrete, quickcrete, of course. And then we're going to go back with some 4-foot goat wire. You can get that at Tractor Supply. And they make the regular farm fence hog wire that has the 6-inch by 6-inch square openings. But we got a little Brittany Spaniel mite. I don't think she could squeak through there, but just to keep things out and keep things in, if you will, we're going with a little bit heavier duty goat wire. It's a smaller, I think it's about a 4x4 square instead of a 6x6, and that's what we're going to be putting up. And we'll put that next up on the outside of the 4x4 posts all the way around the property, and we'll get that stapled and you nailed to the wood posts. And then we're going to come back, and that goes along the outside. And then also on the outside on top of that, we're going to put in the 2x6 boards, long boards. And I'm not sure if we're going to do 3 or 4 yet. I got to see what 3 looks like, and then I got to see what 4 boards, cross boards, look like, and try to get that done as well. So it's just to, you know, get some post in when we can, get some wire up when we can, get some, you know, no big rush, just doing a little bit at a time. So trying to get that. Nope, haven't got the tractor fixed yet. It's still sitting out there. We're concentrating on the fence, but we will be taking off the main cover under the seat that you sit on. The main cover, that's going to come off, and then we're going to pull that hydraulic pump out, and then we're going to take it to the Tractor Supply, not Tractor Supply, but a tractor, Carson Tractor in Americus, Georgia, get them to rebuild that sucker. And then we've got a new seal also, I think, to put in underneath where there's another hydraulic pump on the side of the engine and two metal lines that go up underneath. And so we've got a leak under there, so we'll be putting in a probably a new seal up underneath that where it goes up in there. So that's what we that's what we're doing. So Critter Lover was asking about some fencing, about the goat fencing, if it's less expensive than the rabbit guard or horse type where the holes are smaller at the bottom and get larger at the top. I'm going to look at that, too. I've looked at that. I'm not sure if that's any less expensive. If it is, we may take a look at that, obviously. Every little penny that we can save is a penny earned. So we'll try to I'll look at that as well. Just from going to the TSC website, I wanted to make sure I did. I wanted the smaller openings to keep maybe little critters in that we may eventually have on the homestead and keep up on this lot. Or I mainly keep things out is the key. So, yeah, I'll take a look at that, Critter Lover. Appreciate your comments there, as always. Looks like we got Country Chicken that's joined us in the chat room. Oh, yeah, don't let me forget. Many, probably all of you follow us on Facebook, but I don't know how often that you actually Facebook. But you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And want to make a little announcement. Some people may be interested, and it hasn't panned out. So I'm just kind of a feel out to see how many people would be interested in this opportunity. And I'll just read the post to you that we posted on Facebook about 3 times yesterday and once this morning. Possible opportunity. I'm currently booking our accommodations for the International Poultry Expo in 2 weeks. I'm looking at possibly booking a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in the Atlanta area for our stay. I also have a certain number of employee passes for the event, so my question is this. Is there anybody out there interested in helping me with the broadcast booth those 3 days? You will get free admission to the show, free meals, and free accommodations here in Atlanta for all 3 days. Of course, you would provide your transportation here. So obviously, if you live, you know, within a 4, 5, 6 hour drive, it may just be worth it to you. If you live 8, 10, 12 hours, some people don't mind driving, but I can't imagine anybody wanting to get over here from the West Coast. But if that's something that may tickle your fancy, let me know on the Facebook page. Send me a message on Facebook. Send me an email. If we get enough feedback to where we may have a little contest for people who are interested, And that's kind of the game plan. What will you be doing? Well, those 3 days, the hours for the show are Tuesday, 12 to 5, so kind of a short day Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 to 5, and then Thursday, just 9 to 3. It's the last day of the show. We've got a 10x10 booth there. It's going to be all decked out, and we're going to be broadcasting the radio show live there at our regular time. Probably even all the shows now are extended to 2 hours if we need to utilize that extra 30 minutes, which we might during this show. So it's just kind of very minor helping set up the electronic equipment. You would be more than likely my co-host for that day. Pat can join us as well. You'll be sitting there running the chat room next to us, maybe even running some commercials. And then, of course, when we're not doing the rest show, kind of greeting people, letting them know what we're all about. pardon me. And so forth. So it might be just a kind of a fun little getaway. And then, of course, your accommodations will be there. I will be there, Jen, little man. Possibly Jen's mom will come down and take care of little man while Jen's doing a little bit of online work during the day. But you will have your own private room. So if it pans out, I'm still waiting to hear back from the folks regarding the accommodations. We'll see. So this opportunity may not pan out at all. I just may end up getting a little one room and a bed and breakfast or something like that. But I just wanted to see if anybody might be interested out there. So I wanted to post it to see in case that actually does pan out. We've got that going on. Let me think of anything else. We've got the big chicken coop we're giving away next month in February, which is awesome, from mypetchicken.com. Very excited about that. We've got the International Poultry Expo we're doing here in a couple of weeks. We've got that going on. And then the big Alabama. The dates for that Critter Lover are going to be the show actually is Tuesday, the 24th, 25th, and 26th of January. So it's coming up in a couple of weeks. The actual show is Tuesday, the 24th, Wednesday the 25th, and Thursday the 26th. You'll have to come into town on Monday evening. We'll have the accommodations for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. And then after the show, 3 p.m. on Thursday. We probably won't do Thursday night. So Thursday, when the show's over at 3, you're free to drive back home. Okay, perfect. So we'll just have to see. We'll have some kind of little contest if it pans out. There's still a lot of unknowns regarding this little fun time. So we'll see. I just wanted to see if anybody would be interested in doing that. And if they were, then I would pursue it. If not, wasn't a big deal. So we'll just see exactly what happens. So let me get over here to the perfect. That's not a problem there. Okay. It's 17 past the hour. We're 2 minutes late because normally now, New Year, like to bring on the special guest at 12:15. So, without further ado, I'm going to do that. Remember, later in the show now, we do Chickens in the News segment, and we give away our prize. Yesterday, we gave away an awesome, in fact, it's called the Incredible Egg Scale from eggcartons.com. Today's Wednesday. We're giving away an awesome nesting box from Ware Manufacturing today. So we'll have a little contest at the end of the show today. Maybe a little bit shorter show today, based on what kind of information we get from Teacher Jen. So without further ado, I'm going to head over here, go to the phone lines, and you might hear a little bit of cackling in the background and cooing and whatnot from the little man. I can already hear him, so no problem at all. Welcome to the show, Teacher Jen.
Thanks for having me, Haley.
Yep. And, of course, you're also, I believe, in the chat room under their Teacher Jen over to the right-hand side, so we appreciate you joining us. So first and foremost, not necessarily to toot your horn or whatnot, but want to tell us a little bit about your background in education. So when you talk about this, people will know you, too, are an expert in your field and have many degrees to back it up and the experience as well. So tell us about, your background regarding teaching, your experience teaching, and the degrees that you've got.
All right. Well, I started teaching, I guess, in 2004. I taught in a brick-and-mortar classroom, what they call it now, in teaching kindergarten for 7 years. And in that time, I got my master's degree and later specialist degree. And now, since I am a stay-at-home mom, I'm also teaching. I teach second grade now. But I teach in a virtual setting through the Georgia Cyber Academy. So, done lots of stuff as far as workshops, teaching other teachers, and, you know, my radio show that I had for a while, just, you know, I'm a continual learner, and I like to practice what I preach kind of thing. So I'm just going to be sharing today a little bit of what I have actually done in my classroom with kids and do plan on doing as little Caleb gets older.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important, and I've seen that firsthand, implementing things in the classroom. So that is fabulous. And now you're, again, it's interesting, after 7 years teaching brick and mortar, wanting to be a, kind of as much of a stay-at-home mom as you can, teaching online, and which is an online public school. It's technically homeschoolers, but it is a Georgia public school and a charter school set up, but it's still public school nonetheless, and teaching second graders online. So very, very cool. And you did have a blog talk show called Teacher Talk Radio, and then all of a sudden your schedule just got totally, totally insane, and you put that on hold. But you are considering now, with the new opportunities with Cyber School, maybe starting that back up. But I know you're still trying to figure out if you want to try to utilize the radio show for the kids or for the teaching coaches, the parents or the teaching coach of the homeschool, or for the teachers themselves. So I know we've you're planning on doing something like that as well. So
right. I'm sure, like, a lot of people see these advertisements on your Blog Talk Radio show. You know, on the side, they have all those advertisements for K-12. That's the curriculum / company. It's kind of a weird situation, but that I work for. And I am trying to figure out between my schedule and what subjects, topics, where I want to gear it toward, if I want to start my radio show back. But I'm not sure.
I understand. It's one of those things. Priorities, priorities, priorities. So let's go ahead and start. I'll let you start whatever topic that you want to talk. We can talk a little bit about math and reading and science and social studies. And just to let you know, though, folks, Jen, just to toot your horn a little bit, Jen was Teacher of the Year in 2007. Very proud of that. And she was famous for having, and she'll talk about this, farmers markets in her classroom. In fact, this was awesome. Jen was the first one at her school to have a raised bed garden outside of her classroom window that they utilized for a couple of years. And then she actually got grants for the school for this, and she actually went and did her outreach and got Home Depot to come in and actually build raised bed classrooms for every single kindergarten classroom, which was fabulous. And of course, I'll just tell it like it is, some of the kindergarten teachers that just weren't personally into gardening didn't even step foot in their raised bed classroom, which was really a shame, and you know who you are. But, yeah, it was just such a great learning tool and learning opportunity, and then some of them didn't even touch it. It was horrible, so they just sat there. But she utilized that garden for all the different topics, and then maybe twice a year she had a little farmer's market in her classroom where she invited some of the teachers in the school and, most importantly, the kids' parents to come in and purchase, and she'll talk about how she did all that, purchase some of the great produce that she made in the raised bed garden outside of her classroom. We're talking that she hatched chickens in her classroom a couple of times a year, which was awesome, and that education. She did butterflies in her classroom. She did worms in her classroom, composting worms. Kids would bring leftovers from their lunch tray, and then they would feed it to the worms in the worm bin and do the kind of composting with worms. She would do, okay, help me out here. You did tadpoles in your classroom, tadpoles.
Yeah, yeah.
You did, of course, the butterflies and the larvae and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You've had a parakeet in your classroom. Just absolutely really cool things that I imagine these kindergartners just overwhelmed with all this awesome but fun learning. So that was fabulous. We had a good time doing that. So let's start with a subject, and then tell us kind of how that subject can be, or how the homestead can be used to teach that particular subject.
Well, I'll start off by telling you kind of how I got started really implementing all of this stuff into
sure.
my classroom and the way I teach. And that was my first year teaching. I was teaching a health lesson, and we were going through, you know, healthy foods and things like that. And for some reason, the question came up of where does broccoli come from? And when I asked the question to the kids, I was very shocked by their answers because I just thought everybody knew where broccoli comes from, even five-year-olds, you know. And they just sat there with stares on their faces, and I could start hearing the crickets chirping in the background after a little while. So I thought, okay, I've got to do something about this. And immediately we just started planting things. I didn't have a raised bed garden or anything fancy at that time. We just got the typical, you know, paper cups and, you know, plastic see-through cups or whatever, and started planting beans and whatever I could get my hands on so they could see them grow. And, you know, from that point on, I just knew that that had to be something that I implemented in my teaching. And so the next year, over the summer, we went to Lowe's and purchased all the materials out of our own pocket to build a raised bed garden out of outside my window for my classroom. And a lot of the teachers thought that that was a really good idea. They just couldn't figure out how to implement it into their day. You know, I mean, I don't blame them. It's a lot of teaching stuff that you have to go through to hit all the standards that you're supposed to teach and all that kind of stuff. But I am not one to create more work for myself. Well, I say that, but that's probably not true. But anyway, as long I will create more work for myself as long as it has a purpose. But anyway, I try as hard as I can to combine lots of things so that I can hit more than one thing at a time. And that's where Andy's talking about the reading and math and science and social studies. I teach everything when I'm in the garden. And so some of the things that I've done, just specifically talking about the garden versus, you know, getting into the animals and things like that later, but we started out just learning about, through books, what living things need. We talk about, you know, water and air and oxygen, what carbon dioxide is. And then we can kind of compare that to ourselves and do the needs versus wants and sort things with that. We start planning after we research when and what grows in different seasons. And one thing that you can do with your kids is start a planting journal or garden journal. And inside that, they can create a chart with the seasons and what grows in each season. And they can research that online. There's lots of great things out there to help them. And then they can just write down, you know, what their area is. You can look at the zones and what that means. And I did this with five-year-olds in a very basic way. So pretty much anybody from that age on can do this. Just, you know, add the detail and get more in-depth in your planning with your kids. Get them involved. They really can do it. They are really interested in getting their hands dirty and nature. I mean, that's like something that kids just innately are born with, are interest in nature. So I never had a problem with any of my kids out of all 7 years ever getting them to come out in the garden with me. And in fact, I incorporated a lot of the things that we did in the garden during our recess time. And so I would pull them out of recess to work in the garden for a little bit, and then they would go back and I would pull another group. They never complained about that. They didn't care about not running around with their friends because they were digging in dirt. Who cares? You know, that's like a really fun and exciting thing. So I've never, like I said, had a problem with any kid not being interested in being outside, getting dirty, you know, playing in the dirt and learning about things because they don't even know that they're learning. We just kind of talk and plan, and we make it purposeful. So, you know, start off with looking at when different things grow and what season you're in. And then have your kids pick what they want to grow. Take them to the feed and seed, or you can search online and buy seeds, or you can do started plants. I've done a little bit of both. We started some plants inside in a little greenhouse to begin with some of our plants. We started some seedlings out, you know, directly in the raised bed garden that we had. And you can compare and have them write notes of observations in their garden journals and comparisons about how those different things grow. I gave my kids and encouraged some of them to have an old white button-down shirt from their dad and then a clipboard and have them stick a pencil behind their ear, and they really do feel like scientists. It really gets them in the role play, and they have a lot of fun with that, and they feel very important, and they look like scientists. You know, it's not very much, but they do enjoy that. And so when they take that out, they go and we write our observations about what we're doing and what we see. And then things just start growing. We have to make sure that they're learning how to take care of those living things, what tools they need to have, and you know, things like that. So after the plants get started, you know, of course you're writing, so that's, you know, hitting one subject area in your garden journal. You can do things like create graphs for different reasons. If you have multiple kids, you can do things like what kind of plant did you plant, and then they can ask each other and graph who planted what, so they know how many plants they have in the garden. They can also graph the growth rate of the plants for each week, like once a week go out. And for my kids, for my younger students, I had them take blocks or Unifix cubes. You could have them take paper clips, so they can put the paper clips together and see how many paper clips your flower is, or how many paper clips tall the tomato is, before you get into actual standard measurement. So, you know, toward the end of the year, I do have them pull out their rulers and learn how to use centimeters and inches and things like that. So, and then you can also have them graph what kind of plants they're growing, as in how they grow. So vine versus a stalk or a bush. And then after you harvest those things, if it is something that you eat, you can have them graph whether they like to eat it or not. So those are just a few things that you can graph. So you're incorporating some measurement and graphing experiences with math. And then for science, of course, you know, you just have the life cycles of plants through your observation and things like that in your research. But you also have the observation of bugs and animals that are outside in your garden. You can write down and compare, you know, what kind of bugs you see. You can have them come in and maybe look them up and identify what bugs they're finding in their garden, and whether or not those bugs are good bugs for your garden or bad bugs for your garden. And maybe even research how to naturally get rid of the bad bugs. And then we also did a lot of experiments. You know, of course, you can do the planting in the cups and have one in the light and one in the dark. I did a cherry tomato experiment with my kids 1 year where we planted in three different cups. We did just the seeds of the cherry tomato. We cut a cherry tomato in half and planted half a cherry tomato. And then we just planted a whole cherry tomato, and we were going to see which one came up first, or if, you know, if they all did come up. So, you know, lots of experiments like that. You can even do, like, some sorting with the way seeds look. Some are small, some are big, some have stripes on them, some are solid colors, some are round, some are pointed. And you can have your kids sort in different ways. And then you can do some sprouting with the bean seeds. I mean, those kind of experiments are all over the internet. But you can... I've done it a couple of different ways. I've taken some bean seeds and just put them in a paper towel with that was wet with water and covered them up, and we put them inside a pencil case to keep it dark. And we just looked at them every day, kept it wet, and we got to see, you know, the roots start coming out and the shoots start coming out of the beans. You can also do it by putting them in a plastic baggie and hanging them up, you know, with a piece of tape to a window. So there's lots of different ways that you can do that. But experiments are also always, you know, good for kids to see how things grow differently, what they need, and different things like that. And then for social studies, you know, a lot of people are like, well, how in the world do you do social studies with a garden? I mean, there's no social studies out there, but there's lots of social studies. One thing is, you know, we definitely always talk about what kind of tools we use. And then you can go back and look at what kind of tools were used in the past as farmers, colonists, and, you know, what they used before we have our present-day tools. And then I always like to have them make predictions on what kind of tools they think we might need or could use or might be invented in the future. So that's just kind of one example of social studies being incorporated out in the garden. Another thing I like to have my kids do is, with writing, is a scavenger hunt. And this would be fun if you have two kids, where you have one kid write a scavenger hunt for another, or they can switch their scavenger hunts for each other, and then there's, like, a surprise that they hid somewhere. I did that with my kids, too. And what they can do is they write directions out in the garden. So they're using vocabulary from garden terms and tell the other child, you know, where to go, what to hunt for, what to find out in the garden. You can also give them, if they're really young, a camera and have them just take pictures of different things in the garden. And then that can be the scavenger hunt. They can arrange that where they the other child has to go and find those things in the garden. Or you can have them write riddles. You can have them, again, take pictures of stuff that's in the garden. And then they would write, I am... full of seed. I am hanging. I am made of wood. What am I? And then they would open it up like a card, and the picture would be on the inside, you know, after they guess, and it would be a birdhouse. So that's another kind of writing idea. And then there was another one I was going to say, and I kind of forgot as I was going along, but I'm sure it will come to me later. And, of course, you know, reading is like a, you know, must for everything that we do in the garden. We read all about our plants, the things that they need, when to plant them, and then the animals that we see in our garden, the tools that we use, you know, everything is learned through what we read. And I have a few books that I love. A lot of my books are packed up, so I wasn't able to get to all of them, but I found a few that I just really enjoy. One of my favorites is Miss Spencer's Garden. It's her name is SPITVER'S, Miss Spencer's Garden, and it's by Edith Patu, and it's a teacher that I try to pretend to be you know, incorporates growing and things like that in our garden. And then some of the chicken books, of course, I have a ton of chicken books, right? There's one, it's a life cycle book. It's called Egg to Chick that I really like. It's by Camilla, and I will totally butcher this name. It's Dila Boydier, maybe. Anyway, and I like that one a lot because it's a two-face book. If you open it up in the front, it's from Egg to Chick. But if you flip it over to the back, it's talking about from tadpole to frog. So you kind of get two books in that at the same time. And then there's some, like, just general ones that I found that I have and I've enjoyed reading with my kids, and that's Chicken by David M. Schwartz, and Chick, See How They Grow by DK Publishing, and but there's tons and tons out there. So, as far as my farmer's market, that's something I've always enjoyed doing with my kids, and it's something I tweak every single time I do it. I haven't done it the same way once, but overall the gist is the same. Once our gardening stuff is ready to harvest, whether it be daffodils that we planted 1 year and they keep growing back up, or broccoli, tomato, potatoes, you know, anything that we've put out there, and it's ready to harvest, we write invitations using index cards to our parents and to the teachers in the school, if you're a teacher out there and you want to do this with them. But and we just do a generic, you know, who, what, when, where, why. So they're writing again, and they tell a little bit of information about each of those topics. And then we also say to bring a large bag of coins. You know, if they're younger, I tell them, you know, maybe at the beginning of the year, we just do pennies. You know, just bring as many pennies as you possibly can. By the end of the year, we do a mixed bag of coins as they learn how to count the different coins and things like that. So, so you're working, again, with money during this time, which brings in those math skills. Once we send those home and we start organizing and preparing our classroom, but you can also do this with your kids, you know, and your neighbors. So your kids can send out invitations, write invitations on index cards, pass them out to your neighbors, and then start preparing your home. And the way we do that is Number one, we make signs. And so, again, you're getting some more writing in. But you have to think about specifically persuasive writing. You know, what makes a good sign? What's going to actually capture somebody's attention? What kind of information do they need to know on the sign? Things like that. So we make signs for that. Just to post around, then we, since I had 24 students in my class, we had stations where parents could go and visit. So we had signs for each station. You might have signs with your kids for each type of produce that they are selling. So there are different things like that. We also practiced, because the last thing you want to do is have a farmer's market and tell your kids what to do, but never practice it because it's going to be a disaster. We practiced a lot, you know, and what we did during those times was I would set up the classroom where I had a balance or a ruler, depending on what we were selling. If we were selling flowers, we sold them by the inch. If we were selling, sorry, I have a little man that's stealing my microphone. Ah. All right, hold on.
No problem. Hey, we'll go to commercial break while you, no problem. We will, you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hold on.
That's fine. No,
microphone.
Hey, we'll go to commercial break. That's not a big deal. So
okay.
we'll be right back with you. Alrighty, folks, we are talking to Jen Schneider, education specialist, all about how you can implement the homestead in your classroom or make your homestead into a classroom if you're a homeschool or even after school when the kids come home and it's time to do their chores. So she's got many years of experience doing that, raised bed gardens, having all kinds of composters and hatching out chickens and butterfly, all that stuff in her classroom. So we'll be back, folks. Stay tuned right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at MyPetChicken.com. That's MyPetChicken.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, home of the free chicken coop. Yep, giving away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anybody, and I mean anybody, on the planet. And where else can you get expert advice live from poultry scientists, PhDs, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, and again, gardening experts in their field? Nowhere but right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Very proud to have the guests that we do have come on the show Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we thank you for joining us. We thank you for listening live, participating in the chat room, listening to the archive as well, keeping us regularly, almost, in fact, weekly, in the top 20 on iTunes. And even some of our shows are hitting into the top 10 and even the top 5 on iTunes. So thank you very much for all of that, listeners, for doing that. So alrighty, we're talking with education specialist Jen Schneider. And she's telling us how, again, to implement the homestead in our classroom, or if you homeschool, how to implement the classroom there on the homestead. So very much so. Alrighty, Jen, welcome back. We'll continue.
All right. Well, like I was saying before the break, I was talking about the farmer's market. And what I do to practice is, of course, you know, we have already gone over all the information about how to use a ruler and measure, and also how to use a balance scale correctly. And then what we do is I have my kids, if we're doing a flower, we cut them. And then we try to cut them as low as we possibly can to the ground, obviously, because we're going to sell them by length. And we use either a ruler, a yardstick, or a measuring tape, depending on, you know, what we have around and how long the stems are, in order for the kids to measure it. And I just have them go ahead and practice with their cut flowers ahead of time. So that, and I make sure that they're, you know, doing it right and that type of thing. I also, when we harvest, like, potatoes and tomatoes and things like that, we have a balance scale that it just has two cups on each side, or one cup on each side, so two cups all there, and you put the produce on one side, and then on the other side, we put blocks. If you're doing this at home, instead of blocks, you could maybe use Legos, something that is the same size, though, repeatedly over and over again, so that it's a standard measurement, even though it's not really standard. Anyway, and then I have them practice doing that with their produce ahead of time. And then I also have them, I give them post-it notes. So, for example, if their flower is 10 inches long, then it costs 10 cents. And I have them write on the post-it note, you know, 10 cents as a receipt for the customer. And then if they're doing the produce, you know, and they're doing using the balance, if their potato is 59 blocks, then it is 59 cents. We are kind of expensive, but you know how it is. As you are growing your own food, so they would put 59 cents on their receipt, and then they would add it all up and figure out how much money the customer is going to owe. Now, our farmer's market is a little bit different from most because, you know, usually when you go to a farmer's market, you count out your money and you hand it to the person. Well, that's not how we do it because we want the kids practicing to count out money. So I have the parents or our neighbors or whoever it is to bring a bag of coins, or if they're older kids, they can just bring, you know, cash and coins, and hand the kid the money, and they have to count it out for the customer. But I spend ahead of time with those invitations. I also give my neighbors or my parents, whoever is going to be attending the farmer's market, either at the time of the invitation or maybe even again when they arrive, some directions for them because they need to know also what's going on. And I tell them, you know, please, you know, bring this money, you know, in a bag, whether it be coins or coins and dollars. And then, you know, you're going to hand the money to the child. They're going to count it out. But please make sure that they're counting it correctly. Don't get ripped off, you know, things like that. But so I give them directions as well so that they know what to expect. And then, let's see. They have brown paper bags, and they put all their produce in the bag, hand it to their customer, and with the receipt on the bag because it's sticky, and say, you know, thank you, have a great day. They keep the money, put it in their little piggy bank. And then at the end of the year for my classroom, we decide something that we want to buy for the next year, whether it be, you know, books to learn about gardening, gloves for the kids for the next year, seeds, you know, just anything that they actually want to purchase. And it doesn't have to be gardening things. That's just kind of how I did it most of the time. And then, you know, when the day arrives, we have all the parents, neighbors, whatever, come in, and I have, you know, tables set up with balances, measuring materials, whether it be rulers or yardsticks, and then the blocks and everything set out. And then the kids have their own produce or flowers, and they use what they have. And the parents usually buy their own child's produce, but, you know, sometimes they will buy another child's. Sometimes, you know, in the classroom setting, not every parent can make it to the classroom. So a lot of times I will invite other teachers to come in, and I just have the parents send in a bag of money. And then the teacher uses that money to buy the produce from their child. So they still kind of have that same experience. They're not being left out, even though their parent couldn't make it to the to the farmer's market. And let's see if there's anything else. After the farmer's market, you know, we put all of our money together in a piggy bank because it's for the class. But, you know, you can have your children do their own piggy banks, and you can talk about, you can have them count how much money they have, obviously. But then we also talk about, you know, saving the money versus spending the money, what we want to do, what's important, and, you know, why people do these things. You know, do we want to spend, you know, the 5 cents that we have just because it's 5 cents, or are we going to save it till we have 10 cents, and then we can buy something else? So, you know, you can talk about that saving versus spending which is kind of a math, but kind of another social studies concept. Okay. I think that is kind of a bit of information on the way we do our gardening stuff. I was going to also share, kind of forgot to do this at the beginning, you know, Andy mentioned something about how I had Home Depot come and put raised bed gardens for every kindergarten teacher at my brick and mortar school. And what I did was I just wrote up a request. I knew what materials I needed because we had built my raised bed garden the year before. So I just put all the information in a little spreadsheet saying, you know, we needed so-and-so many packages of nails, we needed this, we needed that, and just specifically listed out all the materials and how many we would need and what the cost would be based on their website information. And I wrote a little note asking them to donate these materials to us. Now, at the time, I didn't know when I did this that they were going to build them. Once I got in touch with the contact at Home Depot, and it was my local Home Depot, and this is mainly for, you know, school setting. They like to give back to their community. So I don't think, even if it's a homeschool thing, I don't think that they're going to be providing you with a raised garden. You may have to do that yourself. But if you do have a public school or maybe even a private school, they might do that. But they have a budget to give back to their community. And so I just wrote a request out. It was nothing formal. It was, you know, just on, in a Word document, you know, we would like to do this. This is what we're going to do with it. This is how it's going to benefit our students. And these are the materials we'll need. Thank you so much. And I took it to my local Home Depot, asked for the person that I needed based on what I had. And the contact lady came out to me. I gave her the manila envelope with all the information. And then about a month later, she contacted me, said that it was going to be approved, and said that they were going to come out and build it for us. So I was really excited about that. Probably about a month later after that, we got the whole date approved with people coming out. We had the news media come out and do a little story on it. And it was just a really good experience. I would have liked, you know, Home Depot, if you're out there listening, I would have liked if the kids could have been involved a little bit more. That's probably a liability issue or whatever. But, you know, to be able to see how to put the raised bed together, you know, maybe even hammering a nail in or whatever. Some of my kids did actually pour some dirt in the raised bed, but I think that was about it. So if you're building it yourself, definitely get your kid involved if you're building a raised bed. Otherwise, you know, if you're doing something out in the garden, they're probably not going to be using it to live, although I'm glad Pat didn't just hear me say that. just get your kids involved in raking. I had them when we were cleaning out the garden, you know, they were to pull out all the weeds. They were to rake the garden. We put newspaper down for the next year. It didn't always keep out the weeds, but, you know, it was tried. You know, I didn't let them handle any things like I did the last year I had to put some diatomaceous earth in the garden. Of course, I didn't have them around when I did that because we had some major fire ant issues. And so somebody had told me that if we, this is one of our experiments, if we used soda water, we could pour that in and that would like suck all the oxygen out of the anthill and they would just die or something. So it was like, okay, we'll try that. had all the kids come out with me. There are ants all over the garden bed. And so we picked the hill, and we poured the soda water in there. And we're looking, and there are ants everywhere. They didn't like the soda water, but it definitely did not make them go away. So the next time I had the kids were not with me, and I put diatomaceous earth in just on those specific ant beds and mixed it up just a little bit, and they were nowhere to be found, nowhere to be seen ever again. So, and you have to be careful with diatomaceous earth, as you know, because of the, you know, qualities of good bugs as well. You don't want to kill them, but I definitely didn't want fire ants in my bed around, you know, kids. So I had to take measures to get rid of those. But as far as gardening goes, that is what we did with that. Do you want me to continue on with, like, chickens and that type of thing?
If you want to talk about just real quickly, and then we'll let you go, and because we want to make sure I have a couple of chickens in the news I want to share, and then we want to try to give away a prize today. So that's fine. Just kind of share us the experience you had with your kids and how they reacted and learned about hatching in the classroom.
All right, sure. Well, we did hatch chicks. Once a year, at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, for about 4 or 5 years, once we got the incubator and all that kind of stuff. And I would always have Andy, the chicken whisperer, come and talk to my kids about how to set up the incubator, why it had to be at a certain temperature, why we had to add water to it, you know, just all the information about what goes into getting an incubator ready. And he would bring the eggs for us on the day that we needed them. We talked about them because I always like to try to do as many different kinds of eggs as possible because, you know, most kids obviously only see those white eggs from the grocery store. Now, it's getting more common that they can now see brown eggs, but they can't always see green and blue eggs, and they probably rarely see bantam eggs. So we try to do a little bit of everything. I try to put as many eggs in the incubator as will possibly fit in those turners that I have. Most of the time I do about 20, just based on the number of eggs that I have, and I have to share them with all of my teachers because once I did it 1 year, then it was like, oh, I want to do that too. So, because it's so much fun and they're so cool and so cute, and everybody enjoys it. So, we put the eggs in the incubator, and then the next thing we do, is there's a Texas website, and I can't remember, Andy, off the top of my head, but it has a little chart that you can, you know, write down what date that you placed the eggs, what the temperature was. If you're not using an egg turner, which I always suggest, the first year we didn't use an egg turner, and not that it was a problem during the week, because you can turn the eggs with your kids, not a problem. But then I had to pack up the eggs every Friday and bring them home, and they were out of the heat of the incubator, and, you know, we never really had a good turnout with that. We filled out that form every day. It would just take, you know, 5 minutes or so, and it helped the kids, and they could see what was going on. And by, I guess it was around week two, the only dark place that I could go, kind of probably sounds bad, is the bathroom. We had a bathroom in our classroom, and I could shut the door and turn off the light. And I would bring about 3 kids in there at a time with an egg and a flashlight or a candle. And I would light it up, and we would look and check several of the eggs and see if anything was growing and what was growing, and we would start to see the veins growing, and we would see the little eyeball, and, you know, the little baby chick getting bigger and bigger, and by the end they were like, why is it just dark now? Well, the whole thing is taken up by the chick now. So each time we did that, we would write observation. I'd have them draw a picture of what they saw and write about that. That's another thing I kind of forgot about with the gardening and also with the incubation or any of we did ladybugs with another classroom 1 year with the tadpoles and butterflies and all that kind of stuff. I took pictures of everything along the way. At least once a week, but, I mean, if you're doing it at home, I would take a picture every time you're out there, every time you do something with your kids. Because what I would have them do is I would print or I would take one of the pictures and put it in a Word document and fill up, you know, about half the page or so with the picture. Or you can make several pictures of different sizes. And you can either just print it out that way, or once you print it out, you can have them use some decorative scissors or something, cut it out, glue it onto some fancy, you know, colored paper or design paper with like a farm scene in the background or whatever. Have them write the date and write about what they're doing in that picture or what they did that day. And keep it, becomes a little scrapbook journal. And that's one of the things that my kids loved to go back and look back at. The parents loved because they could see what their kids were doing and learning. And, you know, it was cheap, easy, and the kids, it was a purposeful activity that taught them writing skills and observation skills and things like that. But going back to the incubation, you know, we would draw pictures and write about the candling experiences. And then when the day came that they were hatching out, I had some pretty good success stories where the kids actually saw the chicks come out of the egg. Sometimes they would come out at night, and then we would, you know, just bring them to school. And that was still fun because the chicks were cute. But it was awesome to watch their expressions when the chicks did finally come out. We would take pictures of that and write that and put that in our journal as well. So just one last thing, too, about that before we wrap it up, and that is, you know, as the chicks would grow, I would put newspaper down on the floor and have my kids circle around, and they would, I would teach them that they had to put their hands out in front of them when the chick came, you know, toward the carpet versus off the newspaper. And then we would go around and touch the chick and talk about our five senses. Of course, we wouldn't taste it, but that's another story. So anyway, we just had a lot of fun with it.
Fabulous, yeah. And then someone had mentioned in the chat room about how those memories that the kids will have will last a lifetime.
Oh yeah, oh definitely. I was there in Midway for 7 years, and my kids would come back that from that first year that we just started planting things in cups, even. But my second year, third year, they would come back to me in the mornings, and they would say things like, "Oh, Miss Schneider, I just love doing the garden. It was so much fun." And I don't even think they really realized how much they learned from it, but they really had a good experience that they will remember forever. And it's something that was passed down to their siblings as well, because I've had parents that, you know, they also loved the whole gardening and chicks and the bugs and all that kind of stuff, that I did that with their kids. And a lot of them would request that their younger sibling be in my classroom again when they came up for kindergarten because they wanted their child to have that experience as well.
Perfect. Perfect, yep. And you still have kids, like you said, come up to you, you know, several years later, and they talk about the chickens, or the parents say, she still talks about chickens, or we went to a farm and she saw chickens and she remembered about hatching them in your classroom and how much she learned about them and commenting. So, yeah, it's fabulous. It'll last a lifetime. So, very, very cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, sharing all of your experiences of, again, using the homestead as a classroom or bringing the classroom or the homestead into the classroom, whether you homeschool or maybe your kids go to public school and they come home in the afternoons and they're doing their chores outside on the homestead. Well, now you can kind of get them learning all at the same time. So incorporate that in all the different subjects that you need to teach. So thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate
you. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Alrighty, very interesting show. Lots of neat stuff and little tips of the trade, if you will, about how you can implement some education for your kids on the classroom. Alrighty, we're going to go to a short break, and then when we come back, I've got at least one Chickens in the News I want to share with you, and then we'll try to give away a prize before we call it a day. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com, that's MTHealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com. VermexUSA.com. To see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Already have some questions preceding tomorrow's show about cast iron. Definitely looking for that. How do I keep my eggs from sticking in the cast iron skillet? Well, there are several many ways to do that. One is the seasoning it. A well-seasoned iron skillet should not stick. So we'll talk about seasoning tomorrow and kind of what I do and what I've learned and how I clean mine, and which may be different than what Richard's going to be talking about from Back Home Magazine. So very, very interesting. So we'll see. All righty, let me get over here to Chickens of the News. I've got one I'm going to share with everybody, then we'll give a prize away. This comes to us from the Northbrook Patch. Scroll down. Backyard chickens ruffle feathers in Northbrook. Trustees consider revising municipal regulations on raising chickens, by Jennifer Fisher. Chicken was on the menu at Northbrook's most recent village board meeting after a resident asked trustees to revisit the village regulations on raising chickens. Board members weighed in Tuesday on whether backyard fowl should be allowed, and if so, under what conditions. Ultimately, they voted 4-2 to send the matter to the Communications and Legislation Committee for further discussion. I think there is a movement in this country to have local food and to have sustainable food, and I think that we should at least look into it, said Trustee Todd Heller. Northbrook joins a growing number of communities in Illinois and around the country that have relaxed regulations on raising chickens. Locally, municipalities such as Batava, Long Grove, and Evanston have recently revised their codes to make it easier for residents to do so. In September 2010, for example, the Evanston City Council made it legal for residents to keep up to 6 chickens so long as they apply for a permit. And while Batavia passed new regulations on the matter in May 2011. Under Northbrook's current municipal code, residents are only allowed to raise chickens if they have at least 2 acres of land. No more than 3 chickens may be kept at one time, and their coop must be 150 feet from the property line. Because few people have 2 acres, or the space or the setback needed for a chicken coop, the village's standards make it impossible for most residents to keep chickens. The board considers noise, odor, and effects on property values, which we debunk these every day on the show. Trustees Michael Scolaro and A.C. Buer both opposed changing Northbrook's current code on chickens and voted against moving the discussion to the committee. If you've been out to Batavia, you might notice some differences there, he said, of the community 40 miles west of downtown Chicago. I don't think you'll see a windmill on our corporate logo. Scolaro said chickens aren't comparable with domestic pets such as dogs, and he warned that loosening regulations could create further problems, like neighbors might get in disputes over noise. The world is ending. And chickens on one property could lower the property values of another, he said. Sir, show me the proof. I know he's probably not listening right now, but show me the proof of any property in the United States, not just your town. Show me anywhere in the United States where someone got less for their house because a neighbor had chickens, or the town they were selling the house and allowed chickens. Show me the proof. Doesn't exist. The laws of unintended consequences could take over here, and we could become the residential chicken farming capital of the world. Show me a town that has allowed chickens that has become the chicken farming capital of the world. Doesn't exist. You're reaching for straws. You're pulling scenarios out of your ear that don't exist. Trustee Sellerhead, he thought chickens weren't necessarily a greater nuisance than a noisy dog, and he supports residents' supports to raise food sustainably and locally. Trustee Bob Israel said, it's a matter of personal property and personal liberty. If someone wants to do that and it's on their own property, I don't have an objection to it. How about that? You don't hear that very often from city council members, trustees, or aldermen. As long as the village was careful in crafting regulations, residents should be able to raise chickens responsibly, said Trustee Catherine Ciesa. I don't think there's going to be a huge run on Northbrook residents going out to buy chickens, she added. She's a pretty smart lady. Some people think that if you allow chickens, everybody in the whole town is going to get chickens. It's not the case. It's not the case at all. We have to educate these folks and teach them about that, about the myths, rumors, stereotypes, like here with someone complaining about property values. Nip that in the bud, folks. Just ask them to show you the proof. Ask them to show you proof anywhere on the planet where someone's got less for their house because the neighbor had chickens or the town they were selling their house in allowed chickens. Show me the proof. They won't be able to do it. It'll be a moot point. Next. Very good. How aggravating. We hear it time and time again, and we go around the country and we try to debunk all of these myths, rumors, and stereotypes. And all these people complaining about chickens probably never even owned chickens in their life. The only experience they have with chickens is when they ride by a commercial chicken house with 60,000 chickens in it, not six chickens. Okay, off the soapbox. Let's give away some prizes, why don't we? And then we'll wrap up the show, because everybody's looking forward to tomorrow's show when we talk about cast iron. Let me get over here to the switchboard. We're going to take caller. I'm not even going to tell you what caller yet. You just may have to be fast fingers. Today's prize is a nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. And, of course, you can find all the Ware Manufacturing products at critter-cages.com. So who couldn't use an extra nesting box? So you get a free nesting box if you know the answer to the following question. And I'll tell you the caller here in just a second. Let me scroll down. Let me pull up the question over here just a second here. Perfect. All righty. Yesterday on the show, Tuesday, we welcomed the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. We welcomed Jeanette Berenger from the ALBC. And she talked about a particular recovery project, about a particular breed. If you know the particular breed that she was talking about, that particular blank recovery project with the ALBC, and your caller, let me clear the switchboard here, caller number two at 347-637-3237, fast fingers, 347-637-3237, caller number two, fast fingers. If you know, yesterday's show, we welcomed, again, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. We welcomed Jeanette Berenger, and she talked about a recovery project on the show and spent a lot of time talking about a particular breed, and it is the blank, that would be the breed, the blank recovery project. If you know that particular breed, give us a call right now, 347-637-3237. You'll win this awesome nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. Yesterday, we gave away an awesome egg scale from eggcartons.com. Monday, it was just such an awesome show with Peter Brown. We didn't give away our Hen Saver Hen Apron. So we may have to do that later this evening on our Facebook page, because we've got a Hen Saver Hen Apron to give away still for this week. Tomorrow's prize, fabulous. A $50 value tomorrow, an awesome brooder kit from critter-cages.com, waterer, feeder, lamp, corral. It's just awesome prize, $50. And then Friday, we got a boatload of prizes to give away here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So remember, if you call in, you want to press 1. If you want to speak with the host, if you call in, you want to make sure you press 1. If you want to participate in the contest, the lady probably said, hey, please press 1 to speak with the host. All righty. So the switchboard's lighting up like a Christmas tree. We said caller number 2. Caller number 2, 347-637-3237. Now, when I go to the caller number 2 and I say their area code, don't hang up, because they might get the answer wrong and you may be caller number 3. And then I'll come to you and you'll win the prize. So wait until they give the right answer and we declare them a winner. Then you can actually hang up in that case. All righty, we're going to the phone lines right now. Caller number 2-347-637-3237 for this awesome nesting box. All righty, caller number 2, you're live on the air with just me today. Area code 203. 203, you're on the air. State your name. Tell us what state you're calling from, please.
My name is Vanessa. I'm calling from Florida.
Vanessa from Florida, very good. Thanks for calling and listening today. Yesterday, we talked about, Jeanette talked about a particular recovery project and a particular breed. What breed was that?
I'm going to guess, but I think it was the Java.
The Java, that is absolutely correct. Congratulations. The Java Recovery Project that they've been working on there at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. So congratulations. And all I need you to do to claim your prize is send me over an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. That's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. And in the title or in the subject line of the email, put nesting box, please. And then within the email, I'll need your name, shipping address, phone number. If you'll include your email again in the email itself, I can just copy and paste that and send it over to the good folks, Heather, over there at Ware Manufacturing. So perfect. You've won a nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. Again, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Name, shipping address, phone number, and email address. We'll get that out to you as soon as we possibly can. Congratulations, and I appreciate you listening today. And that is going to wrap up. Yeah, congratulations, Vanessa, and you're in the chat room as well. So that's going to wrap up another awesome Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show. Pat had to work today at the pharmacy, so we missed her, and I don't think she's going to be joining us tomorrow, but Friday may be in her future for Fun Friday, because we may even have her start off the year with a few of her jokes and riddles. How about that? So thank you very much for tuning in. You can continue to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer, and Twitter is @BackyardPoultry, and of course our website, www.chickenwhisperer.com. Hope you all have an absolute wonderful day, and we'll see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us, folks. Ha ha ha.